This is White Mountain Rescue Without a Trace, Part 11. Before we start today, we have a new playbook to set up for our first responders, because with the heroic passing of Sergeant Hank, we have Daniel's new character, who is going to be the Vanished, a special playbook. Let's go through the usual procedure here. Daniel, could you start by telling us the name, look, and details and playbook related stuff about the Vanished?
Should I do the drive now?
Oh, go ahead and do the drive. Yeah, read that out loud first.
Okay, so his name is Ellis Fogarty, but he is known more commonly in the area as the White Mountain Hermit, because he's been seen out about. His look is he's got a wild beard and hair. He has a hood and cloak made from an old orange tarp, and he usually carries around a crude bow and arrows made out of like sticks and twigs and stuff. But anyways, he does not have a stress reliever, so I won't go into that. But his drive, let me see, drive is the drive says you must prevent more people from the real world from being drawn into the other reality. But you no longer call your old reality home. Why do you keep going back to the mountains of Verdigris? And the answer is revenge and against the others. And he's been there so long that the real world makes him very uncomfortable. But so he actually feels more at home there, and he's got like projects and a community and things. So that's why he keeps going back. He won't stay in the real world.
And could you start us tell us a little bit about your starting moves?
The first one is called Still Trapped in Verdigris, and it kind of builds on what I just said. You have been in the other realm of existence far too long. Time is different there. So while back in the White Mountains, he has a permanent condition called disoriented and incoherent. When you speak more than a couple words of English, the rest comes out as gibberish. Despite this, you know what you have to do to help people in danger in the White Mountains. While you are watching and helping the search, you can only appear to the first responders after three clues have been uncovered. You know your appearance and behavior is distressing to people in the real world, so you proceed with caution when interacting with them. Each session, I can ask the keeper to reveal a clue that is somehow related specifically to the current rescues phenomenon. Additionally, if a mountain clue shows up, I gain a +2 composure for the duration of the rescue, because he's like locked on target. I have vowed to never willingly bring another human into the realm of the others, and so I keep my travels to and from their secret, and so he can bolt to go back into this other reality. And then I picked, mainly for Mike Hester, I picked for my additional move, Master of the Stairs. Like some bizarre subway schedule, you have a mental map of when and where the stairs will appear, how to use them safely, and where they go. You have access to them no matter if the missing camper rescue has not been played, or even if the rationalization move successfully removed the stairs from play. But luckily, they're here. So once per session, I'm able to appear in a scene at any time, ready to help or defend whoever, based on the stairs, using the stairs. But it leaves the stairs. There'll be a staircase there. That's it. That's what I got.
Very good. I'm going to read the flavor text for the playbook, and then the rest of us will assign items to Ellis, the White Mountain Hermit Fogarty. I love that. So you were once a National Forest Service employee working in the White Mountain National Forest, but that all ended when you were taken during a routine training exercise near Mount Washington. The others took you. They took you to another world beyond your comprehension, but you were able to escape and found other refugees from our world in the tunnels beneath the mountains of Verdigris. Time passes differently there, and you and the other refugees have changed. Against all odds, you have found a way back to your homeworld, back to the real world, but everything is strange, and it's difficult for you to focus when you are there. Regardless, you know you have to help the humans who come into the forest and protect them from becoming vanished. So, what items do we think the White Mountain Hermit has?
I would say he does he already has this weird bronze dagger,
Hmm.
which I think Alex used to open
Oh yeah, that's
the
true. Yeah, I did. Yeah.
and he also has sheer determination.
That's fun. So besides those two things, let's see what else he has.
Can I ask, what era is Ellis from?
It's either 1969 or the early 70s. It's somewhere around there.
Okay, cool. Because I feel like that'll inform this.
Ellis has a multi-tool, but it's not like a multi-tool like a switchblade army knife or anything like that. It is essentially half of a skull of a not deer that can be utilized as a shovel, a bowl, a cup, a bludgeoning instrument, that kind of thing. It's just like a skull of a not deer that's probably had like a handhold carved into it, and then a leather like leather wrapped out on the handle so that it doesn't like cut into his own hand. Oh no, I'm frozen.
The not deer guy, yeah. They heard you talking.
Perfect. Perfect.
I'm going to give Ellis in like just to c codify it the orange tarp because like I feel like that's like going to be
Oh,
useful.
fun. Okay.
I feel like you still have like a badge or a hat, whatever would be actually real. This is a real question. For from your service as a forest ranger, but there's like this weird moss that's grown on it that's like kind of otherworldly and glowing.
I'm gonna give you something gross. I'm
What was the badge?
gonna give you something gross. I'm gonna give you beard snacks because you got little like little bugs and things in your beard that are you can as on a moment's notice you got something to snack on.
That reminds me of the Pocket Blueberry comic.
Yeah.
Keep a little blueberry in your pocket for later.
Beard snacks.
Beard snacks. Fantastic stuff.
Terrible. I love it here. Awesome. Well, we're going to be meeting Ellis in a bit, but for now, we're going to pick new end of session questions as always. If you haven't marked new ones, go ahead and take a few. But it's been a few weeks since Christmas Eve, since the night of Verdigris, since the night of Hank's heroic passing. It is Wednesday, January 3rd of the new year, the day of Hank's funeral. Many people from Plymouth and the surrounding towns have gathered, seated in the pews, closed casket, of course, but a framed photograph of the venerable Hank stands next to the casket. Wreathed with flowers, a man who, even in his photographs, looks on with an air of absolute disdain for bureaucracy, but carries the warmth of a man who liked the simpler days and genuinely cared for the people around him, even if he was looking to escape to Florida. Wendy at the podium is finishing her eulogy, speaking of Hank, of their relationship, of their friendship above all else. And she concludes it by saying, well, despite him ever saying it to the contrary, Hank was a hero. We'll miss you, Big Lug. And as she steps down, she invites other people in Hank's life, his coworkers, his friends, to deliver their eulogies of their fallen comrade. So I would like to ask Roderick, Mike, and Dallas to please narrate your eulogy of Hank.
Dallas Bartmoss stands up. You can see some of the Wilderness Boys are by SUVs that are like parked on the road away from the actual plot. Dallas, limping a little bit, not as much as before. There's been a little bit more medical attention, so but there's still a cane there. Walks up to the podium. Pulls out cards. And it's a lot of cards. It's a big stack of cards. And then looks at the photo and just tosses them on the ground. Hank would whoop my ass if I gave a long-winded speech about all the good things that he's done. Hank loved that money. Loved that money that we were bringing into the department. Allowed for him to have a new coffee machine, a new water fountain that had the bottle filler on it. Love that bottle filler. And a new desk. But you know what he loved more? Loved being outside. He loved doing what he did. Hated paperwork and red tape. So, I figure the best way to honor the memory of Hank McBride would to make sure that his name would never be etched on that building over there, because he would kick my ass from the beyond. So instead, what I have done is taken a sizable donation and donated it to the Retired Persons of Florida Fund, allowing them to purchase jet skis, boats, Mai Tais, and whatever else that they need to sail off into the sunset, much unlike what Hank McBride was able to do. I just know, Hank, if you're here with us, well, I hope heaven's got creamer for your coffee. And you can probably barely hear it, and it's like, pause for dramatic effect. Thank you. And then is gonna limp over and sit down.
In the audience is the Knox family, and Tara just rolls her eyes, but otherwise just gives you a nod.
I think Roderick is just like a little befuddled at everything Dallas just did. It's kind of nice though, because some things are still the same. And he looks over to Mike, like, you wanna go?
I'll go. I'll go.
Okay.
I think Mike heads up there, just befuddled by Dallas's speech, because it seems really superficial. Like Hank liked to drink coffee, but like that's more Mike's thing, honestly speaking. But that's neither here nor there. That's probably the nicest we're probably ever going to see of Dallas Bartmus, as Mike thinks to himself. But he goes, yeah, I don't have a lot to say, because there really isn't. He can't really capture Hank in words alone. Hank was always there, first in line to head out into the woods, finding people, getting into even more trouble than I do, honestly speaking. Probably a bit the reason why I'm still here. I think retired a few years earlier, I think I probably would have found a different job, honestly speaking. Hank, for as grumpy as he can be sometimes, he always viewed people in the best light possible, giving compassion where others would just turn their heads away. He always took people seriously for what they said, regardless of their age, regardless of where they came from, regardless of what they're doing, even if they weren't supposed to be there. Hank was truly the best of us, and I'm sorry that he's gone. I think Mike then sits back down.
I think as they pass each other, Roderick kind of claps his shoulder with his good hand because half of him is still bandaged because it hasn't been long enough for third-degree burns to get skin grafted over half of his body, and half of his face is still covered. But he wasn't going to miss this. He absolutely wasn't going to miss this. And he gets up to the podium, kind of kicks Dallas's like cards like into like off of the out of the way so no one trips on him, because the last thing we need is somebody getting stitches here, Jesus. And he just pauses for a second and he looks at Wendy and all of Hank's kids and just I don't think I need to tell any of you that Hank was a good man. Everybody here knows that. He was the reason I stayed in this job. He was the person I wanted to be. And I still do. I still admire him more than I have maybe anyone I've ever met. And I think that the not just the Forest Service, but White Mountain and Plymouth and us, we're all going to be a little worse for Hank's absence. But I hope that we can try to think what he would do in this situation to try to make up for it, to try to embody his kindness and his grace and his affection for other people, his ability to put other people before himself. And maybe if we can all do that, maybe the world will be a little kinder. But I still think that there's going to be something missing for a long time, and I'm really, really grateful that I got to know him. Thank you. And he scoots another card out of the way that he missed. And he gets down and sits back down next to Mike.
The service comes to a close. We cut to an overhead shot of the casket being lowered into the slightly muddy ground. Snow is dappling the area nearby. There's a light snowfall, very, very slight, as flakes fall upon the dark wood of the casket as it's lowered into the grave. And the crowds begin to disperse, walking back to their life as it is now changed. We are going to have an extended out of the woods phase that branches off from the previous one, giving our rescuers a chance to get some vulnerable moves to clear some conditions because Roderick and Mike need that. In place of a unsolved We are instead going to get Daniel narrating a montage of Ellis interacting with the modern world in strange and confounding ways, of the hermit interacting with his new freedom. Dallas, I have plans for you. As the crowds are dispersing from the funeral, Mike and Roderick, you two will go off somewhere to do a vulnerable move. I'll let you decide the nature of that and have some moments. First, though, I will say, Mike, when you approach your car, how has it been vandalized by the cult?
There. Sometimes kids around here like to spray paint cars and whatnot, and even like there is nowhere safe because like they get bored during like winter break, and this is just the edge of it. And I thought I was going to make it out this year without my car getting vandalized, but apparently not. But the thing that unnerves me about it's not the usual tags of like, oh, so and so was here or anything of like that, or like a big grizzly bear or something. It's everything is in white paint, and it's numbers in a spiraling power pattern that is going into downward, sort of like with a focus in the side sort of window, as though someone could look into the center of the spiral and look at me directly if I was in the car. So I'm just standing there, not touching my car, not looking very happy about it.
Roderick, you see this as you're also leaving, but you would see that this has happened to Mike's car.
Oh, damn, buddy, that's rough. Wait, what is that?
I don't know, and I don't care to find out. Could you give me a ride home?
I mean, we are gonna have to pick this thing up eventually, but you know what? How about you hop in my car? We'll deal with this later. But Roderick does take a really close look at it and kind of try to note anything really unique about it other than the everything about it, and look around as if maybe the person who did it is still here, and then just guide Mike to his car very purposefully, like by the shoulder. We're going to your house, like, or maybe not. Maybe we'll go to a Hey Mike, how about a drink? What do you think about
Yeah,
that?
that sounds good.
Very good. The two of you head off. Dallas, at some point during the service, the Wilderness Boys' cars left. You didn't see them pull away, but the SUVs that they had been securing the site with are gone. In place is a single black SUV with tinted windows, and there is a man in a simple black coat, a suit underneath, standing out front of it, smoking a cigarette, watching you as you emerge from the end of the funeral, standing in the spot where your Wilderness Boys were when you arrived. What do you do?
Dallas just sighs and walks over. So, here or there?
We'd like you to get in the car, Dallas Bartmoss. And
Well, that's.
he opens the back seat of the SUV there is a another suited man in there, coat back slightly enough to reveal that he has a gun holstered, not out, just there.
Oh, wow. Forgot to bring mine because I was at a funeral. And then slides in, holds the cane and grips it, not too tightly, but is like, sits in the chair. That's really fucking good.
Daniel posted in the chat, this isn't the out of the woods phase. This is the out of the frying pan phase. That's star. Fantastic. The man with the cigarette slips into the passenger seat and the car pulls out. Alice Fogarty, the White Mountain Hermit. Let's explore some scenes of him in the real world. I'll let you set these up however you want because I just want to see whatever you come up with. And we'll jump between these with our scenes.
The wind is flapping at his poncho that he's made out of this orange tarp, and he's walking on the side of the road in the snow, and he pulls up his hood, and he's talking to himself, and he's like, "There's some good ones. There's still some good ones. If you look, if you look, if you look, you can find the good. There's one right now. That is a good one." And he squats down. And he picks up a half-smoking cigarette butt. That's a good one. That's a keeper. I'm gonna keep this one. This one goes with me with his with the other ones. And he's looking at a sign, and he it it the letters are all jumbled up, and they don't make any sense. But he gets the number. The number is eight. So he's thinking that's not too far. That's doable. That's doable. I got plenty of these. And then he pulls his hood up and keeps walking on the side of the road.
O'Sullivan's Bar and Grill, where Mike and Roderick are stopping for a drink. Let's paint the scene. There are not a lot of food options in the grill portion of the bar. What are the only three or four things available? What's good? What's bad?
Boiled peanuts. It's probably good.
Hot dogs, not good. Do not get the hot dogs.
Anything else? Go ahead.
I'm gonna say the hot dogs automatically come with potato chips. There's no other sides. It's always potato chips, and it's just like a handful of potato chips. If you ask to ha not have the potato chips, you still get the potato chips.
Inside out blueberry muffins. Don't ask why they're inside out. Don't ask how they're inside out. They're just inside out blueberry muffins.
Well, the scene is set. Role play.
Fascinating. Man, I know I'm not supposed to be drinking right now, hailing or some shit. I don't care. Let me buy you a round, Mike.
Yeah.
Was real nice, what you said.
Better than Dallas, honestly speaking. Like,
Don't know.
like Dallas knows that I use the coffee machine more than Hank did.
Man, I don't know. I thought they were that was kind of their thing, you know? I appreciate that they didn't use those silly little cards. I mean, they were a tripping hazard, but like it, you know, I'm glad they didn't do all that nonsense.
They could have put it in their pocket, so you know, like they have their.
Oh, it's not as dramatic though, is it?
No.
And I mean, we'll have to catch up with them, see how they're doing after all this.
I'm still not convinced that they didn't prepare the speech beforehand because they did whisper, pause for dramatic effect.
I just thought that's how they talked. I don't know.
Unclear.
Unclear, but how are you doing, Mike?
Besides going to a funeral, and getting my car vandalized and just being the most senior member on the team.
Am I supposed to call you Sarge now?
I don't know. That's probably Embargo's like call on
Oh
that.
God, I don't give a shit what Embargo thinks. I don't know if I'm gonna stay here, Mike. You know, I'm not trying to dip on you or anything, but I don't know if I'm gonna. I don't know how long I'm gonna stay in this. It's getting too weird.
Well, you don't have to stay forever, but can you at least stay longer than Dallas? Because honestly, just without Hank, I'm going to get into a fight if it's just the two of us. You
Oh,
know that.
jeez. I know. I know. Well, listen, you two need to settle it, whatever it is. I really think you can. I mean, yeah, they're a little bougie, but they're not that bad. I think they're well-meaning. And I don't know how long they're gonna stay. I mean, shit, seems like they like this thing. I don't know what. Damn, I'm done with it. But I'll stick around for you, Mike. Least a little longer.
Thanks, Roger.
We cut to the black SUV driving along winding forest trails. It turns off onto a dirt side road that passes through a electronic gate that opens at a key code that the driver punches in when pulling up. And the road leads up to a ridgeline out in the wilderness outside of town, where there is a log cabin. Very not quite a manor, but more than like a little camper's cabin. It's very resplendent. It's a very comfortable looking house. As the van drives up, Dallas, you see posted security, similar men and women in black suits with guns, spotlights on the driveway in the surrounding woods. But as the car crests up to the top, it becomes noticeably more sparse. There are less lights. There are less security. When the car comes to a stop, your driver and your two attendants step out of the vehicle and they gesture to the front door, where there is another man on the porch holding what looks to be a little security detector. As you step up, waves it over you. You hear the crackle and slight whir as it detects the metal on your being and possibly something else, but they just give a nod and step back. And wordlessly, they just gesture to the front door.
Thank you for the warm welcome. Goes, you're going to open the door for me, or never mind. Tap, tap, pushes open the door with the cane. Tap, tap.
The inside of the lodge is very cozy. The lighting is dim. You can hear the crackle of a fireplace from an adjoining lounge slash study that is off to the side. It's empty, aside of people, well furnished. Let's paint the scene. What modern technological comforts have been eschewed in favor of more analog features?
Surprisingly, there is no electrical lights here. There's just like gas lamps and whatnot.
There's no central heating or cooling. Along with the gas lamps, there just seems to be only a fireplace providing warmth.
A lot of their any like modern electronics seem to be either running off of a generator or a hand crank. And there's it's sparser than maybe you would think.
There's a large military, military-styled radio, and it's painted green, and it's chipped in a couple places, so you can see this metal underneath it, and it's got like really robust like handsets and things. It's not a communication device of in the last 30 years.
The voice calls out through the empty foyer, coming from the side lounge, source of the fire. You hear this woman's voice call out, says, "In here, Dallas."
Tap, tap, tap.
As you enter the lounge, it has bookshelves that line the walls, covered in encyclopedias, world atlases, fictions, all sorts of books. A nice stone rustic mantel frames the flaming hearth, and there are two plush chairs facing the fire, a little end table between them. And in the leftmost, as you enter, you see there is a woman seated there, holding a small cup of tea in front of her and taking a sip from it as she flashes a slight smile and gestures to the seat that's open next to her.
I suppose I'm here for my annual review. Goes and sits down.
The smile is not condescending, it is genuine, but there is a glint behind the eyes. As you sit down, you see that this woman is dressed in a very well-tailored, expensive suit. And her skin is smooth and very coppery. And in the glint of the firelight, you can see that she is wearing an Ankh medallion around her neck. And she says, "I think we should have a chat." And we cut back to the adventures of Ellis the Hermit.
He's made his way to this residential area, and he's staying in the woods, but he's got out this half of a deer skull that's been carved on, and he's looking through the eye socket, and he's scanning this neighborhood, and he says, "Right on, right on, cool beans, gotcha, 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 gotcha," and then he puts the deer skull back, and he climbs up the ridge a little bit, skirting around the housing development or subdivision, and every once in a while he'll stop and he'll pull back some branches and pull up the deer skull and says, yep, right on, right on. And then he slowly makes his way back, and he's in full stealth mode. He's got the orange poncho peeled back to for a low silhouette, and he creeps down the hill until he is in a backyard of a split little home. It's got a small fence. It's got like a swing set and a back patio, and he sees people moving inside and says, "Showtime."
Let's cut back to the bar and grill. Some hours have passed. How has the scene changed?
I think Roderick's a smidge drunk. Like he's not like totally plastered, but he's irresponsibly drunk.
I think as like Mike was starting to drink, he knows like how much faster Roddy was drinking, so like he slowed down of like someone needs to like be responsible for the car. And I think it's just like Roddy, if you were to feel like your pockets and what, you do not have your keys on you anymore.
It takes a minute before he feels his pockets. He's like, "Mike, are you going back to your house? 'Cause I don't know. Hey, do you know who tagged your car? Maybe they're like looking for you. I don't know. Dang."
Potentially, but they may just be focused more on the car. So, and it's been a few hours, and they haven't seen the car move, then they won't go after me. At least that's the theory.
I mean, who do you think it is, though? Like, who do you think it is for real?
I think it is people who live on the mountains.
What, like some Y2Kers or something, or?
No, people who are just a little bit weird. Like, I know I'm weird, but like weirder than me.
I mean, you're not that weird, Mike. I mean, you're a little weird, but like a charming weird.
Yeah,
No?
this is an unfriendly weird because like
Well, yeah, they vandalized your car. That's pretty rude. That'll fuck up the paint.
not too bad. Like it needs just a little bit of a wash, but I hate doing it in winter because like that's just a
Goodness,
pain to do.
the whole thing. Not to mention, I mean, damn, that's a lot of numbers. I don't know what this. It feels like they're trying hard. You know, it feels a little try hard, a little like they're trying to be spooky. I mean, we've seen spooky. We've seen spooky. It's pretty fucking spooky. No, but I still say just be careful if you're going back to your house. You know, like when tonight, you just maybe like double lock your doors. Or, you stay at my place if you want. You know, like that's fine. I don't think they'll look for you there, whoever it is.
Yeah, that's probably the safest, and I probably need to get you home as well. Just
I got it. I got. Starts looking under the bar stool.
And then I pull like the keys out of my pocket looking for these.
Damn! Look at you! Sleight of hand. You a magician or something, Mike? That's pretty impressive. Pickpocketing and shit.
We cut back to the firelit lounge between Dallas and this woman. She sets her cup of tea on the end table and looks at you politely and says, "Can I get you anything? A cup of tea, a drink, perhaps?"
You got Toki?
We do.
Japanese whiskey.
Yes, I am very familiar. Would you like some?
I'll take a double shot with one ice cube,
She
please.
stands up, very primly, brushes off the front of her skirt and steps one foot in front of the other, her heels clicking against the wooden floors of the cabin. She goes over to a globe which opens into a drink bar complete with very expensive bottles of liquors, and she pours you a drink. And she strides over and she hands it to you, still with that polite smile. And she says, "I do apologize for the theatrics in getting you here. I understand that you are a busy individual, and I simply did not wish to allow the room for you to brush off my invitations. I rather unpleasantly decided to put some of my security forces to work. Consider it a bit of payback for poaching one of my former employees. Not that you are aware that you did so. You weren't aware of us at the time. How is old Rezeki these days?"
Well, I thought it was well paid, but apparently not well paid enough.
"Oh, no, he is quite well paid. And don't worry about loyalty issues. As far as I understand, Rezeki is utterly loyal to your company. You managed to pay him more than we were offering, which is interesting. He did, however, abscond with some very private information that he should not be sharing outside. But," she sits back down in her chair, "I'm willing to look past it. I am the director of an organization that currently is known as Prism. I know that you've heard of some of our workings through Rezeki's files, though I have reason to believe that you do not know much about us. And we would like to keep it that way, to a degree. I, on the other hand, know all about you and your company, Botmos Data Solutions. You've made quite something of yourself, rather hindered by that board of directors of yours, as I understand it."
Yeah, a little bit.
And yet you've been
Apparently.
spending a fair amount of time gallivanting with the National Forest Service as a volunteer benefactor. Yes, though you might be, you have been giving an, well, some might say an undue amount of time to helping the Forest Service employees. Why is that?
Aligned interests.
Indeed. Indeed. Aligned interests. She takes a sip from her tea and seems to be deep in thought for a moment as the liquid rolls across her tongue and she swallows it. She looks at you and says, "Aren't you dissatisfied, Mix Botmos?"
That's putting it lightly.
What is it you want, Dallas? Truly.
I want to help those that can't or refuse to help themselves.
She smiles and takes a sip from her tea and says, "Well, now they're getting somewhere." We cut back to Ellis.
The sliding glass door opens, and five people walk out of the house, and they're just wearing like normal street clothes, just regular clothes, jackets. As it continues to snow lightly, and as they're walking across the yard towards the woods where Ellis hides behind a tree, and one of them says, "So it's one of the five." And the guy lead them out there goes, "Yep, it's one of the five. Here it is. I got it out here like it's supposed to be." And he starts to uncover with a tarp and some leaves and stuff, this stone that's about waist high. And one of the guys says, "It's like a rock." And he taps it and he's like, "No, it's bronze." One of the others says, "Do you think we should show? You think we should show him? That might be better off than trying to scare him. We just show him how this thing works." And they're talking about it, and they're like, "Yeah, maybe, maybe not." And the guy pulls out this long bronze dagger. "But I do think it's time for us to send a message." And as he places the dagger next to the this bronze stone looking rock in his backyard, a hand grabs his wrist and snatches the dagger away and says, "Catch me if you can, suckers." And then we see Ellis turn and run, his orange tarp flapping as he runs into the trees, taking the knife. And there's shouts, "Hey, who is that?" as he starts scrambling up the side of the wooded hill.
Mike is driving Roderick's car through Plymouth to get to Roderick's apartment. Let's paint the scene. How has Plymouth changed in the aftermath of the Night of Verdigris?
I think there's still some windows boarded up from a bad storm.
Some trash has been piling up because it's just, again, the bad storm came through here, wrecked a bunch of things. Things need to get thrown away, like the people, like municipal people are like a little bit behind because they were quote unquote off for a few days. It's just been all sorts of chaos. Town's out of whack.
There's a lot of moving trucks, moving companies. We see several across town.
The police station still has holes in it where you can just see orange tarpaulin just be like covering up the holes and everything.
Let's have some light role play in the car on the drive home.
His turn up here. I don't think you've ever been to my place, have you, Mike?
No, you've been to my place though. It's just sort of like technically
Oh, yeah.
It's like a central sort of location between White Mountain and town, really. So, in your place is just a little bit further into town, so.
Yeah, you know. I mean, do you like it though? Do you like your place? You know, like how long have you lived here anyway? I never asked you that.
About over 10 years at this point.
Damn. Wow. Where'd you move from?
Sort of here and there. When I was a kid, I moved around a lot, really.
I get you. Same. So you just like pick this place? Just like plop down here?
Yeah, I picked this place. It seemed to be quiet, a little bit less drama at the time.
Really?
Yeah.
Damn. You know, Hank was telling me it used to be better a while back, that it used to be less, whatever this is. Is that true? Really? I just kind of assumed he was doing that old man thing, you know, where it was like.
No. It used to be better. It used to be a little bit more touristy, but like even when the touristy stuff went down a bit, like it wasn't bad. But the last couple of years, it's been real weird.
Damn. What do you think happened?
I don't know. Like it wasn't like we got a bunch of people moving in or anything like that.
Man.
Just seemed to be the mountain woke up one day.
Damn. Wish I could ask Hank about it. He'd know.
I don't know.
You
I
don't
don't
think
think
so?
he, no, I think he probably doesn't know much more than I do, but
I mean, you do know a lot. You do know a lot.
yeah,
You're a smart
yeah.
guy.
Hank's smart. Hank was smart too.
Yeah, you're both smart.
But I have a plan because, like, I know
You got a
Hank.
plan?
Yeah, I have a plan. I'm
For
gonna
what?
figure out why the mountain woke up.
Oh, shit. Well, count me in.
We cut away back to the cabin, where the director, looking at Dallas, says, "What you are dealing with has many names. Prism refers to them as incursions of a paranatural reality. Plymouth and surrounding White Mountain National Forest is what we refer to as a thin place at the moment. You are dealing with an extra-dimensional threat, although I have reason to suspect you already are quite aware of that its nature."
No idea what you're talking about.
"Oh, don't bullshit me, Dallas. I've been around the block far too long. I have a quite acquired sense for sarcasm. Bullshit, one might say. Don't play coy with me. I've invited you here in good faith, and I wish to have a conversation in good faith. I'm not here to damn you for what you've done. You should be, honestly, thankful that I've even extended this much of an opportunity. I could have shut you down."
I'm sorry, but a corporation with, to be honest, quite a trite name has enough funds and power to shut down the second most powerful and well-known data and technology corporation in the world? Please.
When's the last time you checked your bank account?
Please. You know, people like you and I don't have time to check our bank accounts. That's what we have accountants for.
She pulls a smartphone out of her jacket, a rare display of modern technology in this place. She sets the cup down, swipes through it, and then hovers her butt thumb over a button as she just kind of like looks at you with a smug little smirk. And then before pressing it, she turns it to you and somehow is looking at your company's finances, And is hovering over a button that'll transfer it all to a different account. You are looking at millions and millions of dollars that she has somehow access to. We operate outside of the structured procedures you're used to, Mixbot Moss. She lifts her thumb away from the button and tucks the phone back into her jacket.
I think you hear the shifting of person on leather seat, and then the clinking of an ice cube and a glass and a rocks glass, and then a long sip. Please tell me more.
We cut back to Ellis.
He's running in the woods. It's flat now. He's zigzagging. He's looking for something. He looks. He's like, no. Then he hears in the distance he hears some shouts, and he hears the crack of a couple shots being fired from like handguns. And then he gets behind a tree and he starts putting together his crude bow. And he says, "They want a boogie. Okay, fine. I like the boogie. I like the boogie." He comes around and he fires a wooden arrow and says, "Incoming traitors! Incoming!" And then he takes off running, and a couple more pops from these handguns, and we see three of the five come to where he just was, and they're like, he shot Billy in the leg with a stick, and where did he can't have gone anywhere. He's got to be here. There's just these stairs, and sure enough, there's these old gray cedar stairs in the woods that have handrails on either side, and at the top of like four steps up is a worn welcome mat that says "Welcome."
Back at Roderick's apartment. I can't remember. Did we ever do the question about the describing Roderick's environment as like what assumptions about him would pan out? I don't remember if we did that before.
I feel like we maybe did it like really
Yeah,
early in the
maybe. May have
campaign,
yeah, so then
and I can't
I'll just
recall.
give you a different paint the scene question for the apartment while you two are kicking it back, because it feels like this would be appropriate for getting back to the house and spending the rest of your night here. Describe Roderick's home entertainment system or lack thereof, and how he's planning to kick it back while tipsy this evening. Yeah, this is open to the entire floor, yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm opening this to the floor. Please tell me some assumptions you have about Roderick.
Are y'all familiar with the early 2000s CD changer, like late 90s,
Yes.
early 2000? Like
Oh,
this
yeah.
this can hold six CDs. Well, that's exactly what Roderick has.
Yes.
Yeah, like I just imagine like those big like Bluetooth speakers like and next to this CD change like it's more audio than I think Mike was expecting. Like Mike would think like a like Roderick would have like a decently sized TV, but like that's not the main like thing that catches his eye.
Yeah, in fact, oh, go ahead.
I was going to say there's I don't I'm just trying to think of some, but I can't think of any. Maybe you guys know some. I think he has like a small collection on a shelf of like some one person like games, but I can't think of any, like not board games. Like maybe the maybe those little puzzle games where you're trying to figure out how to get something through a loop or something.
Yeah, like the metal puzzles, like the wooden ones, stuff like that. Yeah. And I
Rubik's
think,
cubes, yeah.
yeah. And like half of them are solved. And I think like there is a small TV. Like he does have a television, but it's not like the main thing. And he does have like an actual real ass CD collection. And it's like, you know, the And Justice for All album, Metallica, you know, we've got like System of a Down, like it's all of this like sort of like 80s, 90s, early aughts music. It's not even like modern music. It's not like this is the era that he really enjoys the music from, and it's so clear. And he ushers Mike in a little bit, or Mike ushers him in. But he double checks that the door is locked. Double, triple checks it. And all right, make yourself a home. Make yourself a home. He does check that the one window he has that, and then the balcony door, he like goes and checks that they're locked still before he even thinks about relaxing.
I think Mike just heads over to the kitchenette, getting a glass of water for Roddy.
Hey, you want anything to eat, Mike? No, we don't. That shit back at the bar is not food. It's not. I don't even know if it's up to code, frankly. I don't want to ask. I don't want to get them shut down. They're the only bar in town. But I'm pretty sure those are some sort of health hazard.
It's probably just that they're using generic brands and unique recipes.
Yeah, I was like, I don't know about generic. I've had generic.
The hot dogs.
The hot dogs are, I think, a health hazard. But it's fine. But I can make you some if you want. I'm fine. I'm fine when he gets handed the water. Yeah, I'm fine. I'm not that drunk.
You still need to drink water and not
This
get the.
is That's fair. Okay. You get some. You can have make. You can have whatever you want to drink here. Obviously, it's fine. He doesn't have like a lot of like. He's not super well stocked, but he's a little more well stocked than he was prior to his mother's visit because he got food and like extra shit for her being there. Like, so he would like have people things in his house. Yeah, I'll get the couch set up for you later tonight so you can sleep. It's like it's one of those pop out, it's one of those fold out
Ooh,
couches, so
nice.
you'll be that way. We don't need to run back to your house for anything, do we? Because I think that might be dangerous for
No,
whatever these.
I'll go back in the morning.
Okay, well then, he kind of like he's getting everything kind of settled down, getting insisting Mike gets something to drink, even if it's just water. You want to tell me about this plan you got? Keep me in suspense.
Well, I. There are certain things in life that technically you're not supposed to do. But however, in the grand scheme of things, like things balance it out because like a bad person did extremely bad thing. But then you acquire that thing and try to use it for good.
This is ominous, even for you.
I took a thing from Hobby Lobby, so.
Oh, well, that's a victimless crime. They're a piece of shit.
However, the thing that they had was a little bit more unique. It's a sort of a it was the sort of the camera that seemed to like ward off like a bunch of the creatures from the mountain.
I never knew what was actually going on there. I was busy triaging people. I mean, shit. I was, yeah, there was a lot of, there was too much go. What are you talking about? A camera warding off things.
Yeah, it's sort of. I don't have any a better word to describe it as it being magic. I know, with what we've seen so far, like magic's real.
Oh, I mean, I don't want to label things. That seems
We had,
woo
we have flying like mosquito creature things, vultures, as well as giant ass salamanders. Like,
Okay, fair. All right. Okay, yeah, those were really sort of. Those were a little fantasy-esque. Okay, I'll cede that. Okay, so you got a fucking magic camera?
yes,
What? What's it do?
I
Take magic
don't
pictures?
potentially if
I'm
like
joking. What it like for real though?
And I think like I've been sort of keeping this in my pocket for a while, just trying to figure out what this actually means. And Mike pulls out like some papers that he had like sort of folded up in like his coat pocket, and he like hands them to Roddy, and they're his adoption papers, like saying like he was Michael Whateley.
Oh, well, shit. That's interesting. What did are this is this like a new development for you?
This is something I've learned in the past few months.
Oh shit. Well,
But however, it's connected here, Rodri, because the camera, do you know what it said on it? Like the label, like who's the maker of it?
I could never guess this. This
It
is
said Whateley, and I pointed to the name. It's all
Wait.
connected, and I'm just on a verge of breaking down at any moment, and I just don't know what to do.
He just gently puts his hands on Mike's shoulders. He's like, "Man, I don't know what this is. There's clearly some fucked up shit going on, but I got you, okay?
The
You
mountain
take."
is the mountain's trying to kill me.
Oh, you know what? I fucking believe that, and I'm not gonna let that happen, okay? I told you I'm staying, and I told you I'm staying for you, and I'm not gonna let the mountain kill you or whatever this, I guess, magic camera thing hurt. Listen, we're gonna figure this out together, okay? You Googled this shit, I'm assuming.
The sort of the adoption papers arrived at my door.
Okay, that's ominous. Wow, a lot of this is ominous. I'm not really digging. Damn, you didn't tell any of us this? This has like been going on for months.
I told Hank about it, and
What did
now,
he say to do?
like he said, like originally I thought Dallas was the one that brought this up because like Dallas like has a data company, and I have no
Yeah.
idea what they do except that they're like the
Oh,
second
me
richest
neither.
group in the world.
I have no fucking idea. Couldn't tech. You could. I couldn't.
And like this showed up after like I had a major fight with Dallas.
So they would just like send you adoption papers like that you.
I think they're just
That's a
like
weird move.
I know, but they are weird and dramatic, and I
I
don't
mean,
understand.
I doubt that they did this. Did you ask them? Did you just go up to them and ask them?
Like how can you like just bring this up to a person and just say like, "Hey, did you send me these like weird cryptid like folders to my door at one point?"
Exactly that. You say that.
We cut away. Dallas, the director, looks at you and she says, "I have an offer for you, Mix Bartmoss. And please don't mistake this as some ultimatum of you either take my deal or you are fucked. No, not at all. You are welcome to deny my offering at your own leisure. And from there, you may proceed with things as they were, and perhaps we will meet again. Perhaps our interests will align, or perhaps we will be mutual thorns in each other's paw. My offer is this. I know what you have been up to on your own terms. Investigating, researching. You have been trying for some time now to convince your board of directors to allocate all the necessary resources you wish you could have at this present situation here in the White Mountain National Forest. Am I correct in that?
You are correct.
And what so far has been your biggest obstacle in the way of accomplishing that?
Not enough fungible evidence.
Indeed. Your board of directors operates on the terms of a Fortune 500 company that simply wishes to continue its main objective, which is profit margins. And despite your own beliefs, at the end of the day, your operations are entirely limited to the whims of capitalism. I'm offering you a chance to actually pursue the goals you have stated you wish to devote yourself to, the active pursuit of protecting those who are unable or unwilling to protect themselves against forces that are higher than the station that they were born to. You believe yourself to be a great individual. You consider yourself to be highly capable. And for all of your grandstanding, there are admirable traits you do possess and capabilities that you are proving yourself to be someone I could see myself working alongside. If you are willing, Prism will be taking over Botmos Data Solutions. In return, you will have our full support, provided you continue to collect evidence, not on the nature of these extra-dimensional incursions. Of that, we have sufficient evidence of our own, but evidence of someone. We would like you to continue your work, but collect in secret any information you can find on Michael Hester's. If you agree to these terms and work for us and provide us with the information we are looking for, you will have more than you bargained for, Mix Botmos. And me, the keeper, will step in to say, mechanically, what is happening here is you have a one-time offer to essentially change the hidden agenda move. You no longer need to gather mountain clues, but you will be able to fill boxes whenever you successfully, secretly spy on or otherwise gain information on Mike's life and doings and stuff like that. You will also take the permanent condition agent of Prism. But if you do take that, you will also gain access to a new out of the woods phase, replacing the Wilderness Foundation with the Prism facility, gaining access to Prism resources.
So let me get this correct. What you're doing is negotiating with my better sense of wanting to help people altruistically, wanting to take my love of putting myself in extreme situations where people are under duress and helping them with no chance of them ever repaying me back in any way necessary. In a way, for you to seize control of Bartmoss Data Solutions in all but name, ousting the board of directors that has hindered all progress that I've tried to push forward over their incessant need for greed and wealth to push forward. In of this, you will allow me tons and tons of research and resources at my whim and beck and call. I will not have to change my lifestyle. I will not have to change the things that make me interested in living and being a citizen of this planet Earth. And all in exchange, I have to work directly for you in making sure that Mike Hester's, a person who we have bristled against each other. I have been a grade A cunt to him, and he has been a grade A plus cunt to me. And that's all. That's it. That's everything that you want. There's no riders, there's no ulterior motives. And what you're telling me is, in short, I can have everything that I've dreamed of wanting in my life, and all I have to do is spy on Mike Hester's and belay that information to you.
Yes, and of course, continue your operations that you have been already embarking on. I'd hate to make a desk jockey out of you, Dallas Bartmoss.
There's a pause. You can hear the crackle of the wood in the fireplace. And then there is a long sip. Where do I sign?
And let's go to break. Time has come to introduce our next rescue. 3 months later, the crashed chopper. White Mountain National Forest helicopter crashed today in the main section of the forest. Before going down, the pilot issued a partial distress call, but then his radio went dead. A small plane in the Forest Service at a higher altitude located the crash 4 miles north of Virginia Lake on the other side of a series of rocky ridges and valleys. It is extremely difficult for vehicles to go into this area, and due to the mysterious circumstances of the crash, all local aircraft are grounded and not allowed in the crash region. Mike. The helicopter had two NFS crew members, the near retirement age pilot, Tony Gilka, and the veteran forester, Teresa Torini. How well did you know them? Which one did you like, and which one did you usually try to avoid?
Oh man, like outside of like the crew here, I would go drinking out regularly with Teresa. I like she can like outside the job she's real cheerful and friendly and the like. But however, God, T Tony Gilka like is honestly could have became my brain is embargo at one point, and I think he like has a little bit of vendetta. So like anytime like anybody within like coworkers get near him, he tries to like make sure everything is done by the letter, and it's just really, really irritating because he technically doesn't have the authority to do so.
You took a separate helicopter and disembarked as close to the no-fly zone as possible on a rocky ridge with no trees. You are about 3 miles west of the crash site. Once you get there and locate survivors or bodies, the helicopter will meet you back for an extraction on this ridge. There is a slight but steady drizzle as the above gray skies make it seem much later in the day than it actually is. You each may add wet weather gear and waterproof packs to your personal items for the duration of this rescue. Let's paint the scene. Before you head out, you study your waterproof map one last time. You see a closed logging road and the Hannah Brook as two features you will have to navigate. What else do you notice on the topographical map of this remote chunk of wilderness?
The altitude is unusually high, like for the area. Everything's sort of like, you know, when you're looking at a topographical map, they have it scaled, and all of the numbers around here are much higher. It's higher altitude than everywhere else.
The trees in this area are oddly sparse. I believe this part of the, and correct me if I'm wrong, this part of like the region, there's a lot more like evergreens, I would say. And it's odd because there are still evergreen trees, but they seem like all of their like pines, their needles and everything have fallen off and everything. So it's just odd.
I think there's several sections of the map that have like red hash marks that are printed on the map, and the print says around it says restricted.
I think this is something that Mike wouldn't notice because like it was such a significant event, and this is because I do owe a clue for this mystery because of the vulnerable move from earlier. I think the sort of altitude number is like It goes by like every like sort of ridge line upwards, but however the numbers themselves form a pattern into a spiral.
Add that clue to the list then. The question for this rescue is the helicopter crew alive or dead? Complexity 8. If you answer that, you can then resolve the rescue by finding the crew and escorting them or their bodies out of the forest. Getting back to the extraction point, too. Yeah. We have a special crown available for this mystery or the rescue, the Crown of the Predator. Each first responder narrates a flashback to when they enjoyed hunting or fishing a worthy prey. So, the helicopter lands on the ridgeline and then takes off, leaving you three standing. This ridge gradually descends down to the forest. And the closer it gets, the more vegetation begins to grow on it. You're kind of on this bald crest at the moment. With the gray clouds hanging above, there is no sun or heat to worry about. And also, it's, early spring, so a cool breeze follows you as you descend towards the crash site. Let's paint the scene. The weather report said there was a slight chance of rain today. What makes you think it is actually worse than that?
I don't know if this is appropriate for the area, but I don't think it matters. In the distance, up on the ridgeline, you can see there's a wall cloud slowly approaching.
The hairs on my arm stand up. There is electricity in the air.
Every once in a while, way far up in the clouds is a flash of lightning.
I don't think during minor rain, things like pine cones and small rocks and pebbles should be flying at you at a when the occasional wind picks up. But that's what is Dallas now.
Ellis, where are you?
After the helicopter went down, he spent most of the time like moving quickly to try to get to the area, and then he sees the second helicopter, and so he changes his direction from going to where the crash site is to the next helicopter, and he's laying on the ground flat with some leaves thrown on him as he's watching the first responders head towards the crash site.
Now, let me ask you about your move, Still Trapped in Verdigris. It does say each session you ask the keeper to reveal a clue. Is that automatic? It just you now you have to ask me to reveal a clue for the phenomenon? You're muted.
Yeah, I can I think we just go ahead, if we want to just go ahead and start that off. Yeah.
Cool. I mean, I like that because, yeah, absolutely.
He's trying to figure out what he's dealing with here, you know?
I may reveal a clue that is somehow related to specifically the current rescue's phenomenon. Sure. Let's see here. Oh, yeah, I might as well go whole hog on this one, don't I? There is, as you're moving through the tree line, or rather just through the forest, you come to a stop, your haggard eyes looking up to see hanging upside down from a tree is what may have been some individual in the forest, but it's hard to discern much about them because they are completely skinned and quite dead. That is your clue. On the ridgeline, the three first responders descending down towards the forest. What are you chatting about? What are you doing? What is your plan?
I think for Mike, he has like his normal gear and whatnot, but like something that's quote unquote odd about him is that he has like this sort of box container like at his side. Like it's been like the box has been like sort of sealed up but like and wrapped in rope and just like a clip on onto like his sort of backpack and whatnot.
And Roderick says nothing about it. It's been long enough. He doesn't have bandages anymore. It's just skin grafts. He looks kind of rough, but he's not actually actively injured anymore. Thank you, vulnerable move. because it sounds like
Like a
he's
good.
going to be. What was
And
that?
behind you is Jake from State Farm.
Yeah. Cryptid. It's
Sorry.
terrifying.
Dallas says, sorry. What's
No, it's
up?
good. You're good. You're good. Dallas, how have you been doing? Doing good?
Feels weird, doesn't it?
Yeah. It does.
You taking point on this, Sarge? Looking over at Mike.
Sergeant
Hey.
Michael Whately Hesters.
God, I can't believe I have to change my name again. I'm gonna take a point on this one. Just see what we've got. Probably get up on a little bit higher, so like to get like perspective down to like see if like. How far the crash site has been split off, because while you guys go directly towards it.
All right. Yeah, time is of the essence. If they're alive, they're probably pretty injured. Dallas, you wanna scout with Sergeant Mike, or come with me?
I'll go ahead and scout with Mike and everything. You seem a bit more capable. Maybe Mike can give me some pointers on something as intense as this.
Right.
Before you decide to split, you have to cross a brook on the ridge line to get into the forest proper. Hannah Brook, as it's known, you hear it long before you actually see it. It comes down the wooded ridge line in a mountain stream that seems to bounce from rock to rock, sometimes making small little waterfalls. What signs of natural danger can you clearly see around this stream that you will need to cross?
There is a trio of rocks, two that are next to each other, but not directly like nuts to butts on it. And then there's one that sits on top of them that is creating a vacuum. So if you slip, you can get pulled under those and you will drown in like 3 feet of water.
A sort of one of the reasons why you don't cross Hannah Brook without being alerted to what it is that it doesn't look that dangerous. The water seems to be very still in places on the surface, but that is like the fastest, like the water is moving those spots, so you can just get swept away.
Where it flattens out, a lot of eroded materials and silt and stuff has accumulated, and it's very deep and it's very soft as we're going into the spring thaw. So the mud can be like gripping.
And the rocks where there's not gripping mud, the rocks are incredibly smooth, eroded by time, and that makes them incredibly slick.
I'd say that having studied the topographical map, if you're deciding to kind of like split ways here, you can see different features of the area. You know that there is this old logging road in one part nearby that is you'll have to cross on the way to the crash site, regardless, deeper in. Aside from that, there's just deep forest in this area, small clearings and glades dotted throughout other ridge lines. You have a few miles to go before you get to the crash site, but it sounds like you wanted to split up now and do some different tactics, as with two going and one going. All right, cool. What is Roderick's plan?
To as the crow flies, go towards where the crash site was projected to be. He's pretty familiar navigating topographical maps. This isn't like his first rodeo. He's pretty confident in that. And
And Dallas and Mike, what are you two doing? You said you're scouting?
yeah,
What does that mean?
probably circumnavigating the area of the crash site, see if any survivors made their way from the crash site, see
Gotcha.
if
Send the
there was
medic
any.
in straight. You guys are doing the periphery. Love that. Nice little area search. All right, very good. For now, because you are not under immediate duress, I'm not going to say it's dangerous to cross the stream at this moment, but possibly on the return, especially if the rain picks up, this thing will flood and that'll be fun. But you take your time to carefully manage yourselves across the Hannah Brook and proceed deeper into the forest. Roderick, you're all alone as you split off from the other two, continuing as the crow flies, as it were, in the direction of the crash site. Eventually, let me think about something for a second. The overcast gray clouds darken slightly. Yeah, there is more rain on the way, and you hear distant thunder, and the light sprinkle kind of spatters against your face. Good thing you packed prepared. You step onto this old logging trail. And except for the deep cuts in the forest floor from trucks long ago that hauled timber, this is barely recognizable as a road. Larger trees are on either side, and smaller trees and weeds have grown in the years of no use. And every so often, the ruts have washed out, digging into a ridge line due to erosion. What other signs are there that this used to be a logging road decades ago?
I think that there are like the piles of logs ready to be they're obviously very old, cut and ready to be hauled onto a truck, but it never happened. So now they've just sort of become part of the landscape.
There's a rusted sign, but who knows what it said? It's a rectangular shaped sign that's on a rusted pole, but the sign is it's totally rusted over.
A lot of the trees in this area are new growth, probably less than 20 years old.
There are random shacks along the way, one, two person shacks that are filled with moth-eaten and rusted, moth-eaten high vis vests and rusted helmets.
Very good. You hear the rev of an ATV and some distant shouts as a group of people on ATVs come hauling ass on the logging road and yelling are heading in your direction on these ATVs. What does Roderick currently look like in the 3 months now with his burn scars?
It's like literally whole half of his face was just completely just seared, like he stuck it on a stove. And so it's very obvious, like, and he doesn't make a move to, he hasn't tried to cover it up. He's still dressed the same, he's still got the ball cap on, with a little national forest. Then he's still in his uniform, but it's just full burn scar up the half of his face.
One of these
And all probably down
figures,
his neck and arm.
one of these figures on the bike yells, "This!" And they stop their ATVs. And from even a distance, they haul bows, like hunting bows off of their backs, draw an arrow and fire it at you.
Holy
It's the
shit.
dangerous move. What do you do?
I imagine my first instinct is to put my hands up, but as soon as they draw their bows, I'm like diving down.
All right, it'll be plus your vitality. What are you afraid of happening here should you fail?
Getting shot with an arrow in
Yeah.
a vital organ of some sort.
Yeah. It is worse than that. It will be a very slow, painful death as opposed to a quick one from getting shot. Yeah. Like we're talking like a pierced stomach, like very bad. Yeah, so roll plus vitality.
All right. Oh, what's my vitality? Okay, Christ, at least it's a one. Seven.
Seven. Okay, great. You dive for cover as this arrow flies and sticks into the tree that was near you. You hit the ground with a heavy thump, and you threw yourself kind of like half behind like a ripped up stump that was part of this old logging road, with a heavy landing, kind of knocks the wind out of you. And I think your complication is going to be that you are in more danger at the moment in that there are this wasn't a warning shot. This was like you the volley hasn't halted. They keep firing occasional shots in your direction while shouting orders to one another. Not in the organized way of a soldier, but like panicked people. They are firing more shots, and so there are more arrows occasionally like fly by. They are very much still actively firing on you. So you are kind of behind cover. That is your you don't have the window of diplomacy unless you figure out a way to make one for yourself dangerously because they are firing on you.
I mean, regardless of whether I think diplomacy will work right now, I'm like, hey, quit it. Hey, Forest Ranger, Forest, what are you? I'm here to
Forrest,
help.
very good. Because of the complication, I'm gonna make this a dangerous roll for reasons I know.
Okay.
It'll be plus your presence. Now, what are you afraid of happening should this attempt fail?
Well, I am afraid that it will, I'll probably expose myself physically, and in stopping, that will cause me more problems and put me
Yeah,
in more danger.
it's going to be worse than that because they are going to like rush you and you will find yourself engaged with multiple people who are trying like to beat you down. You're going to be in like a,
Fucking
four-way combat with a
Christ.
bunch of people in the woods.
Good
Yeah. So
Christ.
unless you choose to back down and run away, you may roll plus your
No.
vitality again.
Oh my God. Holy shit. I thought you said it was presents.
Oh, sorry, presence. Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, I know that's
No,
like
it's
a
presence. Yeah.
sort of knock on me because I got zero
Notice
presents,
presence, yeah,
but
thank you.
that is a nine.
Okay, very good. Then I'm going to give you the condition stressed. But sure enough, in the yelling, you scream out that you're a forest ranger, that you're here to help. The volley of hunting arrows stops for a moment, and you hear some terse whispering and grunts from the other figures. And the voice that originally yelled, "There it is," calls out to you, saying, "Get up, stand up real slow, hands above your head."
And he does just that. He's got his hands up first. He's up.
You see this group of six people. The one at the head of them is the one who's addressing you, and they are all wielding compound bows. You actually see they have some firearms on them as well. A couple of them have hunting rifles or like pistols strapped to their side. The one who's talking to you is clearly flustered in a very irritated state. He is dressed in a denim shirt with the sleeves cut off. Seems to be in about his like maybe mid 20s to early 30s. Hard to say. He's kind of got a bit of that like backwoods scruff, little trucker cap on his head as well. He has an arrow knocked in the compound bow, but he's like looking at you as your hand's coming up. And he goes, "What are you doing out here?"
No need. No, don't worry. I'm a forest ranger. Roderick Lopps from the National Forest Service. I'm here on a rescue. Don't worry. I'm not here to fight. So we can put down our weapons and talk about this like people. All right?
We thought you were it.
What's it, bud?
There's like some whispering amongst them, and this one, the main guy, looks out to you and says, "You wouldn't believe me if I told you." And we cut away to Dallas and Sergeant Mike walking around the perimeter in the deep woods. It is a dense forest of primarily pine trees that tower above this carpet of pine needles and smaller trees. Weak sunlight that barely filters through the canopy above casts a dappled light amongst the various shadows here. Really, the only sounds you have that surround you are the branches moving in the light breeze and the occasional patter of rain. Let's paint the scene. There is no easy access to this patch of the forest. You guys have been kind of walking around in a wide arc, moving deliberately for a time. What confirms that you two are the first people to walk under these trees in a very long time?
There's no proper trimming on trails. Branches are trimmed back so that there is like almost like a nice natural archway over trails. There's none of that. There are branches that are in the way that you have to push aside.
A small porcupine is waddling through the pine needles, and it's not really paying attention. And it physically bumps into Sergeant Mike Whateley Hester's boot, and it kind of makes a little grumbling sound, and then it walks around Mike like it's like, what's that?
The detritus that like all the on the forest floor is really thick and it hasn't been cleared away by people stepping on it. There might be small little trails from porcupines, maybe a deer, but hopefully a regular one and animals, but like it's not actually been brushed away from the path. It's very thick and all of your steps you crunch.
I would just describe it as a feeling that Mike has. Sort of like he can tell like, oh my God, that there's people like disrupting like the natural world by intruding like tipping over rocks and whatnot, but none of that feels like this is the place that people have done that. At least not in it for a very, very, very long time.
Mike and Dallas, what are you doing?
How are you taking to the new desk?
It's interesting. I really don't think I've needed a new disc.
Been doing a great job so far. Look, Mike. I know this isn't the best time or place to do this, but you kind of avoid me while we're in the office. You always turn down any invites to dinner. I mean, Roderick has come and had dinner with me a couple of times, but you always turn down offers and everything. I'm trying to bury the hatchet here, fella. We've experienced some, pardon my French, fucked up shit. And, I think maybe we should, turn a new leaf, start anew. Like, I haven't even asked you what your interests are, like your hobbies and everything like that. Like,
I'm not sure how to say this, Dallas, but folks have their own way of grieving. The last conversation I had with Hank was about you.
wow, that's I feel honored almost.
Hank believed in you.
But you don't.
I think I just don't want to destroy Hank's faith in you.
Okay, well, how about we make this operation a brand new start for the two of us, for Hank's sake. And if things turn out all right, we turn out that we have similar interests or we actually don't hate each other or anything, then it's not even just for Hank's sake, it's for our own.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Let's
This is gonna sound weird, but I'd like to start over properly. We should do introductions. My name is Mike Hesters. What's your name? And I reach out a hand to shake Dallas Bartmoss.
Dallas Bartmoss, how the heck are you? And gonna take the hand. Shake.
Alice, they're in the woods. What are you doing?
Split up. They split up. Oh, crap. They split up. They split up. They don't know. They don't know. They split up and they don't know. They split up and they don't know. They split up. They don't know. Follow the one. Follow the one. He starts, he started following, Roddy since, and then when all the, arrows started flying by, maybe a couple zing past him. And he's like, no, wrong direction. Shooting in the wrong direction. They're firing in the wrong direction. Yeah. And so he's crawling, trying to go around the guys with bows, trying to get behind them.
That sounds risky. Yeah, it sounds like a risky move. What are you afraid of happening here?
He's afraid that he'll have to find an exit, and he doesn't want to do that just now.
That's fair enough. I'm going to say that this is probably going to be plus vitality crawling around like this. You are pretty disoriented, though, so I'm gonna it's you got a muddled mind, so you will have disadvantage.
Surely, with all my gifts that I was given, there's something that I can use to offset that. Sure, beard snacks will come in handy. No, I'm going to use sheer determination right off the bat. We're going to use sheer determination.
That makes sense.
Clear the head, and
Smack your head against a rock to shake the cobwebs loose.
yeah, let me get some dice.
I love how Wes froze in that
Very 80s movie ending.
Yeah.
Love it.
Okay. My vitality is plus one. That gives me an eight. Seven plus eight. Yep.
All right, eight. You do, but there's a complication. I know what the complication is. As you maneuver yourselves behind them, you, with a very heavy thud, trip over like a small little jutting rock-like ridge, and like land and thump with a crunch of various leaves and branches, and the entire group spins in the direction of that like loud, heavy thud and crunch, and. While they were conversing with Roddy, one of them, the one that the lead just go, like looks at like them and says, "You check that out." And they look very much on edge as four of them split off from the other two and begin moving into the forest with arrows drawn, bows at the ready, as they're stepping very cautiously into the woods, looking for where you just landed. You now have some people actively looking at you. What do you do?
I'm
Well,
trying to
they
figure
don't
out.
see you, but like, yeah, they're looking for you.
Oh yeah, I was trying to figure out what my success did for me, but they did for me. They don't see me.
Yeah, they didn't see you, and also they did, in fact, like you got behind them, but the yeah, so the and it seems to have drawn some of them off of Roddy's back, but the thing is they haven't seen you yet, but they are looking for the source of that sound.
Then I'm gonna take my old Forest Service badge that's glowing with moss, and sling it in the opposite direction to try to act as a distraction.
I like that. I will say that if you just remove it from your sheet, you will I'll let you do it. I'll just let it work with no roll as if you had rolled a 10. But if you want to try and also hold on to it, and like by like scrambling and like getting it back at some point and outmaneuver them, then I'll have it be risky.
Okay.
Up to
And
you.
is this at a disadvantage?
I would say I won't give you disadvantage for this. It would be plus your vitality just for moving quickly. I'll give it to you flat without marking the item. It's just that I think the risk here is what are you afraid of happening here?
Oh, that, that they see my hand as
Yeah,
I'm landing.
that
They see my hand and they don't see the badge.
makes
And
sense. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm gonna roll so I can use that again. And I'm not even gonna, I don't think I'm gonna mark it for advantage.
Yep, sounds good.
I'm just gonna try to pick it back up later.
Yeah, makes sense.
All right, a 5 and a 5 and a 1 is a 10. No, 11.
11. Hell yeah. I will tell you right now that if you bump that up with a crown, your added bonus, I will give you a mystery clue, which will bump it up to 3 clues, which means you can reveal yourself to Roderick if you so choose.
Yeah, let's do that.
Cool. Which crown do you want to mark?
We'll do the flashback to the time that I worked in the White Mountain National Park in the late 1960s.
Do you want to do that now or do you want to hold on to it?
Oh, yeah, I'll hold on to that.
All right, cool, very good. Yeah, fantastic. Go ahead and narrate what happens.
I fling the badge and it makes like a glow. Like a swirly glow in the dim light of the trees, and then it probably like maybe even like a ninja star, like a shuriken. It sticks into some bark, and they see the colored movement and fire some arrows, and one fire some arrows up, and one of them says, "It's in the trees! It's up in the trees!"
Yeah, back with you, Roderick, before I give Ellis the clue. This is happening, and they were interrupted as in their middle of talking to you, and the leader of the group looks over his shoulder and says, "Shit." And looks back at you and says, "Look, these woods are dangerous. Fuck, just stay out of
Yeah,
our
no
way,
shit.
we'll stay out of yours, okay?"
Hey, absolutely. Hey, listen, man. I know the woods are dangerous. I fucking work here, but you can't be firing arrows at people. We might have people who are injured, civilians, which I might remind you, you probably are. You have not identified yourself, but I can't have you shooting
Blaine
arrows at me.
Phillips,
All
and we're
right.
not firing at civilians. There aren't no civilians out here except those looking for revenge.
There are civilians out there. They crashed in a goddamn helicopter. You cannot be shooting at people. Who are you looking for? You have to tell me before you get out of here. I can't just let you go.
Not a who, it's a what. But with the calls of men from the trees, and Vince like, "Is it in the trees?" And they're firing arrows. He goes, "Shit, fuck." And he says, he just looks at you with like a kind of like a "don't fuck with me" look, and he like runs off to go join the other groups and yelling after them, see what's up.
He's
In
just
that
that
moment, Ellis, you get a clue, and then you will have sufficient enough clues to choose to appear to Roderick if you desire. Let's see. As you are maneuvering through the tangled weaving of stumps and some smaller recently grown trees, and you hear them yelling off in the direction you distracted them. You also are able to kind of like move in like a in a big wide arc, grab the throne badge, nice and shiny and mossy, and tuck that back away. And you're kind of like glancing around. Your eyes wild, and they squint because you notice that several of these like low branches on some of the trees nearby have been sheared off, like deliberately cut by something. And they're not the kind of branches that you would normally cut off when doing general like tree maintenance, you know, of like covering over growth. These aren't managed trees, so you just see these sheared off like lower branches. It kind of catches your eye. That's your third clue. But how does Ellis appear to Roderick?
He scrambles the opposite direction around towards Roderick, and he looks behind a tree and makes eye contact with Roderick and says he's probably 10 or 15 feet away, and he points in a different direction and says, "Peace and love. Peace and love. Can you dig it?"
And Roderick, who is like, "Well, this person isn't firing at me with deadly weapons." And he just mouths, "Dig it." And it thumbs up and it's like, "Lead the way to this strange mountain man."
Oh, we're in the fire zone, he says as he runs past you and back into the woods, kind of circling around these yahoos. "We're in the fire zone."
Yeah, no shit.
I have a paint the scene question for everyone, even though it's only Roderick right here. In the 3 months since the Night of Verdigris, what stories of this white mountain hermit have you heard circulating around Plymouth?
Sergeant Mike Hester's believes that there has been a recent increase in bear activity because, there's been like garbage cans that have been like turned over, and like there's a description of a big burly man that's been eating trash. Honestly, one of the more common creatures that get mistaken for people are bears. So.
Of the various Bart Moss Data Solutions research outposts on White Mountain, there have been security footage of a quote unquote hippie drying off his private parts in the air dryer of our restrooms.
You know, a lot of summer homes, cabins along the edge of the White Mountain National Forest. Some of the summer homes in the winter have been broken into, and some of the cameras have, some of the security cameras have got pictures of like a vagrant looking guy. And when he breaks in, he just takes some food, and each time he leaves a hand scrawled message, "Thanks, don't be square."
I think we've gotten some complaints from campers about somebody being in a campground they had reserved it, no one else was supposed to be there, and there's this guy in an orange poncho walking across their place messing around. Like, he never does anything, and so Roderick hasn't been like super pressed. He's like, okay. But there's been a few reports of sightings.
Sergeant Mike, since you're taking point on this area search, why don't you roll the search move plus your composure, keeping a keen eye focused on the dense trees, looking around for anything that might indicate survivors.
Actually, Alex, I would like the scene to extend a little bit longer before I
Oh,
roll.
okay.
Dallas, I know. I've been sort of investigating this mountain a little bit, and I think like one of the ways that we should that the to like keep the record of things is to take photographs of like what's on the mountain. And I know sometimes like technology is a little bit weird on here. So like I've gotten some older stuff that doesn't rely on electricity. So I'm going to take out the Whately camera. And like I'm just like I think we're up on this sort of ridge line and like just to like sort of like seeing out trying to figure out like where the crash site itself is. Like I'm going to take a picture.
Then in that case, you have to roll plus sensitivity.
Which is gonna be real
What
fun.
did you do, Chaotic?
This is your new custom move.
Oh no.
What did you get?
Six.
So good. You bring the camera up in front of your eye, and you look through its lens, you take a photograph. And there is a click, flash, and almost like the moment before lightning strikes, both Dallas and Mike feel all of their hair stand up as if the air is charged with ozone. And a sensation dapples goosebumps all the way down your body. And a smell like burnt hair and excrement flashes through the wind. And then you hear a large thump from behind. And as the two of you turn around, you see a 7 foot tall figure with long limbs and white alabaster skin. Its facial features, other than the large black eyes it has, are almost non-existent. There is no visible openings in its face. It is dressed in bronze armor, stylized with leaf decorations, and his helm is a blank faceplate, essentially. There is a green crest made out of strange plants, carrying weapons of strange bronze and javelins that crackle with green electricity. Let's paint the scene. As the hunter drops into view, what small trophies has he already accumulated and now hangs from his belt?
He has those I don't know what they're made out of, but they're testicles that you hang on the back of your pickup truck.
Mm.
He has a pair of those.
But they're real.
No, they're off of a pickup truck.
Okay, thank God.
He has a human jawbone that is threaded through. It's like looks like there holes have been drilled in it, and it's on his belt.
I think the quote unquote clothes this hunter has worn is like since it's so large, it's made up of like smaller people sized clothes all stitched together.
You see a you, like there's like a patch in it that you just see that it's taken from a hat that just says women want me, fish fear me.
Yes.
The capacity guide up and down the sphere like fantasy or like wuxia spears that have ribbons on them is a series of Boy Scouts merit badge sashes, torn and bloodied.
This hunter figure lands from the trees, looks at you, and through its mass, you hear it say, "Angeliath Dila," and it throws a bronze spear directly at you. You have to dive out of the way. You drop the camera as per the miss condition on your move, and you have to scramble to get away, leaving the camera sitting on the forest floor.
I want to put on a crown.
Yes, you do. What crown do you put on?
I put on a crown of the forest.
Very good. Do you want to narrate that now or come back to it?
Come back to it.
Very good. In that case, you don't drop the camera, but that's it. That's the only thing that changes as this spear gets thrown directly at you, you two, I should say, in your group. It's the dangerous move. You and Dallas are being hunted by the hunter. What do you do, first of all, as this thing throws a spear at you two? What is your go-to action here?
Dallas has watched many nature documentaries and knows that when a predator is attacking you, you must make yourself bigger than this predator. You must do something unexpected. There's been no greater time for Dallas to prove themselves. And so Dallas charges this hunter with the landmine from the Knight of Verdigris, and essentially gonna
What?
just like push it onto the hunter, like this, like I imagine there's like a incline, and just push it with the hunter, like trying to stick it onto the hunter and pushing the hunter.
That's the dangerous move for sure.
Yeah.
I'm gonna say with vitality, I don't hold the same rule from other CFB games that because you're dealing with the supernatural, it is this is I'm letting you do this with vitality because this is very much a vitality opponent. What are you afraid of happening here?
I'm afraid that Dallas is going to trip and the landmine's just going to go flying.
It's worse than that. The landmine's a dud.
Oh, God.
Oh! I thought it was just going to explode with Dallas still holding it.
Nothing worse than getting an opponent up and close to an opponent and then like, oh, this weapon does not work.
I will also notes for people that haven't seen my custom move. I also, because it's 7 to 9, I get 2 clues.
Yes, you do. What'd you get?
I take advantage. I take the two highest. I roll a 6, a 1, and a 1. So 7, because my vitality is 0.
Very good. Okay. You like run forward and just slam the landmine up against this thing. You hear like the click and the little dip as it seems to have an understanding of what this thing is, because as soon as you press it very quickly slams one of its armored hands onto it to hold it in place, given that landmines should this thing remove, it'll activate. So it holds it like fast so it doesn't detonate. And with its free hand, slams up against your throat and hoists Dallas into the air. You see that the mask kind of like splits and opens, revealing this like smooth white feature. But you don't see a mouth until it opens. What does it look like when its mouth opens?
You've seen The Matrix, right? When Mr. Smith makes Mr. Anderson's mouth close, it has that like almost like that waxy kind of two lips, but they're still attached in certain parts and it just stretches, and you can see gravelly little teeth behind them.
It lets out this kind of vibrato heavy rattling roar at you as then like throws you slam up against a tree. I'm going to give you the condition, battered and bruised. But you otherwise succeed, and the hunter leaps with a standing jump that goes well over 15 feet up into the air into the dense tree line and disappears. You just see the shaking of boughs and the fall of pine needles as it disappears somewhere else, moving with all the swiftness of an ape, and disappears in the quiet gloom. And then after a moment, as your ears stop ringing, you just hear the click of the photo plate on the Whately camera unlock and slide open. The way I'm, because this is like an old Victorian box camera, it in a in the normal world, you would have to take this plate to then like develop it like chemically as like and treat it. But it seems like, however, this camera kind of functions like a really analog like Polaroid of like it ejects the metal plate after a time fully developed. But then it has to be like reset and then you have to like put it back in there. Yeah, so it's like you can't keep the photos this way, but you can like see them. So as the plate comes out, we get the photograph of where Mike was looking before the hunter dropped down between you guys. I have to give you two clues.
Two clues.
Okay. Let's see what we got. The Whately camera does not show you what you took a picture of. It's a completely different photograph, but it seems framed. Like the framing of the photograph is eerily similar to the surrounding environment. So it would be like if you took a photograph of, you know, oh, there's this tree here on the left, there's this rock on the right, and then you can see the sky and kind of this like V-like pattern over top the trees. It would be like you're looking at a completely different photograph, but it's like one of those AI images that generates where it's like it's patterned the same way, but it's clearly different stuff. So it's like, oh, that same similar V shape is up here, and it's not a tree, but this thing on the right, you know, it looks very similar to that, but it's framed similarly as if you're looking at a parallel but different. In this photograph, you see just this is not a murder of crows. This is a massacre of crows. Truly, so many of them in these trees, mouths or beaks, I should say, all open, a little too wide. And despite being captured in a still picture, you can tell that they're all cawing in distress. The way their eyes bulge out of their corvid skulls, their beaks strain open, and almost like the air itself shimmers from just the vibrations of their call. That's the first clue. The second clue, you see a figure, hard to make out details, running down this the direction, center frame, away from you, with footprints going from the fr going from where you took the picture, following them deeper down this tunnel of corvids. That are your two clues.
And because I have a thought.
You have a thought?
Yes, because of like using the Whately camera for the first time. Because I never seen anything like this before, that the monster coming out of the camera. I think just because I want to find a mountain clue with this. Because
No, you're going to use never seen anything like this before, I see.
The keeper determines the mountain clue.
Okay. Let's see. Oh, yeah. This is actually a really mean one, but Daniel wrote it, so I'm going to do it because
Yes.
this is going to be how we end the session. This will be a cliffhanger. because this is your mountain clue. Two more hunters step out from behind trees, armed and armored, revealing themselves, looking at you, and the hunt is on. And that is the end of the session. Let's go to end of session questions and then jump into stars and wishes. Starting with Roderick. We did not resolve a rescue, but did you experience an echo in time during your extended out of the woods phase?
I don't remember
Didn't set anything
once.
up. That's fine. Did
No.
you share any medical horror stories or career goals?
I did share career goals. I did tell Mike that I wanted to leave very badly.
Mark an XP. Mike, did you impress the others with your wilderness skills?
I don't think so. I think I've horrified Dallas.
Did you share your insight about the National Forest?
Not directly. I think just by the rumor I shared, that's maybe pushing it a little
I'll give it
bit.
to you. I like it.
Yeah,
Okay.
you also told me about a plan you had for like about the mountain thing. So I would
Yeah,
say that's
I'd say you could
insight.
take an insight. And then did you set up an echo in time during that out of the woods?
No.
Okay, that's all good. Dallas, did you share your wit or wisdom with the first responders?
I think more wit than
I'd
wisdom
agree.
during the funeral. I would say just a little bit of
I'd
that.
agree. Did you explain yet again why you love volunteering? You technically did to the director.
To the director, yeah.
Yeah. And did you experience an echo in time?
The orange tarpaulin.
Yes.
Describing the orange tarp and then the orange tarps hanging up in the police station.
Take three, get in advance.
Hell yeah.
And Ellis, did you primarily speak gibberish?
I tried to.
Yeah, I loved it. And did you learn about the happenings of the real world? Yes, you did.
Yeah, I guess I did, yeah.
Because I set up that unseen for you. Yeah. And did you experience an echo in time?
I tried to with the tarp on top of the stone bronze
You
thing.
also did blueberries. Because you had mentioned something about blueberries, and then Dallas had also previously did the inside out blueberry prompt on the menu. So it also it was a fun one. So yeah, you get three. Awesome. Great. Let's go to stars and wishes, everybody. Whoever wants to kick us off.
Stars to Daniel for Ellis. I love it. It's such an interesting twist on like the guy from the mist or whatever, or like Jumanji, instead of it just being Robin, you just doing I'm Robin Williams, Jumanji, kid with it looks like a monkey, you're doing like this. I love the hippie thing, like far out, man, don't be a square, like just this. I'm assuming this granola guy that used to work for the US Forest Services that like just got stuck. It I can't wait to learn more about Ellis, but I love Ellis. I'm just like just the don't have a cat. It's like Bart Simpson. If Bart Simpson got stuck in Jumanji and he's just skateboards away, don't have a cow, man. I love it. It's fantastic. Big fan of Mike Watley Hester's. Just creepy stuff, creepy, and we're seeing like such a I'm feeling this. I think we're seeing a shift in the in the relationship between Mike and Dallas, because Dallas is like, I'm gonna bury the hatchet with you to get information on you, but also because we're working with each other because it's what Hank would want. And then we're seeing Mike be like, yeah, we'll bury the hatchet because I'm trying to figure out what the fuck you're doing, and I'm gonna use this camera that I found. You know all about this, don't you? And Dallas is like, I have no fucking clue what that is. Like, it's so interesting. Like, Mike's like, you know all about this, don't you? You know everything about my tragic backstory. And Dallas is like, I don't know anything, but we're just here for the ride. And it's such like, I think it's gonna be an interesting dynamic now, because what I'm hoping to see, or what I think we're gonna see, is them just trying to one up being nice to each other, but also trying to find out shit about each other. It's so great. Alex, fantastic narration, fantastic pacing, fantastic stuff with the prism stuff. It was so good. I felt the tension. It was really good. Like, it was, I love it. I love like SCP Foundation type stuff, or Federal Bureau of Control stuff, where it's like, we can ruin your entire life, bucko. You don't have to work with us though, but just let us know that if you do make problems for us, we will make problems for you. And like, there's no point in anywhere in my life where I'd be like, well, I think there's like 9 out of 10 times there is a universe where I was like, fuck you, lady. Fuck you, lady. Nah, Dallas Bart Moss don't work for nobody. But no, I was like, no, I have to see where this goes. I need more prism in my life. And then Drunk Roderick. Drunk Roddy is so fucking. I'm like, I just want to squeeze you. You're so adorable. What happened to you? But yeah, no, all in all, great situation. Great stuff. Can't wait for more. I love this game. It's a great way to kick off my Wednesdays. So yeah, I'm here for it.
The stars, I want to say, really loved everyone's eulogies for Hank. I was already looking forward to that when I had the idea to start with have everyone do their eulogies, but everyone's truly were very fantastic. I loved the soft sincerity of Roderick's, and I also loved Mike's, and just the kind of like still genuinely nice, but also still kind of rude Dallas eulogy was pretty fantastic. I also thought it was a great detail of just like, I'm gonna donate a sizable fund to the Florida retirees, fund. That was great. Yeah, I was echoing that, Daniel. Ellis, the way everything I wanted from how I was assuming you would play the character and more. I'm gonna specifically star Peace and Love. Can you dig it? As being his way of saying that's basically being his come with me if you want to live. I'm just like Peace and Love. Can you dig? Like that was so fucking funny. I really loved that, and yeah, that was fantastic. Chaotic seeing the Whately camera in action. Very excited for how that's going to interlace with the remainder of this campaign, to adding some really flavorful, terrifying cosmic aspects to our otherwise eldritch situation. That was great. But I did love the interaction between Mike and Dallas in the forest there, of like starting anew, pleased to meet you, shaking hands. That was very fantastic. And yeah, B Roderick being drunk, you played the way that you role played drunk Roddy. It helps that you might have laryngitis because your voice was like kind of like a little like tired and exhausted a little bit, but it helped. It really served the character. No, that was very good. I liked seeing kind of drunk, vulnerable Roddy kicking it back and chatting with Mike. And overall just being a fucking trooper with those burns, and also, just facing down situations. The comment where you told Mike of like, I'm thinking I'm not going to stick around after, it's like very real, very true. But clearly the fact that is now promised to stick around longer than Dallas will, for at least Mike's sake, is there's such good camaraderie with these characters, even when there's conflict. Like the dynamics we've had over the last 11 sessions, it's just been fantastic. Wish-wise, we're 3 clues, mountain clues away from triggering the end. So we still got plenty of runway to work with here. I'm excited to see how things shape up from there. I want to see more of the Wilderness Boys again soon, because we got Dallas's funky little advances to make use of.
I am taking a custom move, it is called You're Not in Kansas Anymore, from Avatar. And it is essentially, I am making Raseki, just like essentially like it's gonna be like a having a factotum, but just as a side character that's always there.
That's
So it's
cool.
gonna be, yeah.
That's really cool. I
So
like that a
I'll
lot.
work out the details of it later with like the playbook moves and stuff, but I think it'll be a little interesting thing of like
Sick.
an extension of like state of the art everything, but like just kind of like having an assistant that can help out with stuff.
Awesome. Yeah, those are my stars and wishes.
I'll go. Hey, full disclosure, the Vanished was Alex's idea. I can't remember when he like threw it out there,
It was
and
early
I
on in this campaign. I threw you the idea of like a
yeah.
playbook that was basically the Jumanji thing. Yeah.
So it's fun to see it like on paper and then like in play. Star for Alex's transition from the knight to of Varagus to Verdigris to the out of the frying pan instead of the out of the woods. I thought that was a great way to transition from that horror show to get the game started back up again. And a star for totally aiming Dallas at Mike. And another star for the worse than that, the landmine is a dud. That's a great one because typically we're like, it blows up and then it blows up your family. And then it keeps blowing up. And but instead, you went the other way. So a big star there. For Wes, inside Blueberry Muffins, I want one. And a big star for Wes for everything after, let me get this straight. A big star there. And Dallas has watched many nature shows is another good one. Stretchy Mouth was good. For B, at the eulogy afterwards, talking with Mike, that pause for effect, I just thought that's how Dallas talks. I just thought that's the way he talks. I'm not here to fight is another good quote from Roddy. And then this is a combo with the two drunken Roddy and Mike. I have a plan. And before Mike could describe the plan, Roddy's like, shit, count me in. I'm in it. So big star there. And some stars for Chaotic. I took a thing from Hobby Lobby. Like, it explains everything. Oh, okay. Well, sure. If you took it from Hobby Lobby, then it's got to be, yeah, let's do that. And then the whole Mike doing that, it's all connected. That was great. That was a great way that Chaotic was channeling Mike's conspiracy theorist. It was awesome. Wishes. Yeah, I kind of wish I hadn't wrote that clue about those extra two hunters. So, sorry. My bad.
I don't know. I love it. I think that's bold. that's very bold. Oh my God. Stars. So many stars. So many stars for everyone. This was fabulous. Alex, the pacing of this. I know I always compliment your pacing as a keeper. This was so fabulous. This was like where you really got to flex how good you are at that because it was just so always these perfect cutoffs. And it was really delicious. The idea of having us all do a eulogy was so cool. Like, I've never seen someone handle like a main character death that way, and that's really fun. And I'm really this is a wild one to start us off with after the worst night of our lives. I think it's going to be the second worst night of our lives after all this. Just a guess. Obsessed with all of it. Oh my God. Daniel Ellis is so delightful. I had no idea what you were going to do with this character, and I am so beyond pleased. Like, Ellis entertains me so much. You play him so well already. I'm obsessed. Like, I have to like second the peace and love, can you dig it, has come with me if you want to live, like, was so good. Oh my God. And I really liked the way you narrated his first scenes. Like, we didn't know what kind of house he was going up to. We didn't know if he was going to be like a bad guy or a good guy. You made it kind of seem like it was like a regular family. And then it was showtime, and it turns out it was the cultist. And I was like, oh my God. I felt like I was watching a movie. It was very good. It was very good. And Dallas, the scenes with Dallas and Prism, that also felt very movie-like. Like, that was so delicious. The tension was so high. I actually didn't know what you were gonna say. Like, it was such a cool way. And the fact that you're like, no, I wanna roll with it and see where this goes is so cool. Like, that's so cool. Like, and I'm really fascinated by this sort of parallel character development with Dallas and Mike. Someone else brought that up. It might have been Wes, it might have been Alex. But that they're like their relationship is sort of like dude, and I'm so excited to see what y'all do with that. Like, chaotic, I love doing vulnerable scenes with all of you, and this was such a fun one. Oh my gosh, that was really fun. I love that you're like, I stole something from Hobby Lobby was a really good line. I love that you're like, you have this weird master plan now that's going on. Like, It's an undercurrent that adds a lot of like interpersonal drama to all of this, and the wild card of essentially having like a really fucked up magical camera. I'm very excited to see whatever that thing does. Like after all this, I'm so excited to see where everybody goes with this. My wishes is just I hope we all don't die before I get to see what some more character development with all three of these cats. I hope we all don't get murdered like in The Predator. But I also am very excited about these horrible, horrible creatures.
I gotta give a star to Wes for just now I'm Sergeant Mike Hesters, I guess. I can't believe I got promotion. I also have to give a star to Ellis for l literally stealing a knife from a cultist and saying, "You're never gonna catch me." And just running off into the woods, just completely unhinged behavior. I'm looking really for looking forward to seeing Ellis because like Ellis strikes me as like just a different version of Mike. Like if that makes sense. Like they're like Mike could become Ellis in like a good like 5 years. I'm not gonna kid you. Like this is just it the mountain is bad, y'all. And I love it. Also star for Dallas just for saying, yeah, I'm a grade A cunt, but Mike is a grade A plus cunt. Like that was just that was just amazing. Roderick, I just love our moment together of like, oh no, Mike, you're the good kind of weird. And I'm just like I just love it like like I'm like being compared to cultists and being like, yeah, you're weird, but you're not bad weird. It's just lovely conversation. And Alex, I'm so glad you approved my move because technically speaking, a lot of my moves are starting to combo with each other now. So like I'm just like, oh, I can do this now. I can do this. I can literally get like up to three clues with one move, and I'm just like so pleased. And then West disappears because he got intimidating.
Yeah, it's fine. Any
But
other? Oh, continue. Yeah.
yeah, but I am looking forward to seeing where we go next with this because like, oh boy, I have no idea what the bow and arrow squad are doing out in the woods, and I'm scared.
I do have one more wish, and
Yeah.
I hope because we're getting pretty tight with mountain clues, but I do hope we get to do another out of the woods phase because Ellis does out of the woods but into the mountains, and I hope we get to see that.
Yeah, no, I think we definitely will. I mean, like, I don't think we're gonna get three more mountain clues. I mean, well, even if we did, we still have an out of the woods phase before we would start the final rescue. So, but yeah, any other stars or wishes from anyone? Then we will wave goodbye and see you all next time.